So my spouse has been out of town for a little bit, and the first morning that he was out of town, because this always happens, my daughter bebopped into my room at 7 a.m. and said, "Mommy, I feel like I'm a flat earther."
Okay.
Wow.
I said,
at 7 a.m. as you're waking
right,
up. Yeah.
Right.
What was she been doing? Like, she's on like these like weird chat boards.
Right. Conspiracy theorist sites. <Yeah. laughs>
I'm a flat earther.
Yeah. She's talking about chemtrails. And, like, I've been listening to Alex Jones.
What, right. What does flat earther mean to her? What does she think?
I collected myself and I said, good. Say more about that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well done. Good parenting.
I feel like the earth should be flat.
Should be?
Yeah, should be. I said, right. But we are not actually crazy in this house.
Or at least not that way.
Right. Yeah. There were different types of crazy.
All right. Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
All right.
Yes.
Gearing up for Ash Wednesday.
It's almost Ash Wednesday here. Has passed by the time this comes out.
Right now, we're gearing up for Ash Wednesday.
Yes.
I'm living in the present, man.
Two of us are gearing up for Ash Wednesday. The other one does not work at a church.
Fair enough.
Yeah. One of us is gearing up for Ash Wednesday.
That's also true.
Ash Wednesday is important. Are you going to tell me that Lent doesn't matter?
No, I think Lent's fine.
Okay. Just Advent doesn't matter. Okay.
It's not that Advent doesn't matter.
It's pretty clear that Advent doesn't matter.
It's just Christmas. You know, yeah.
Just Christmas doesn't matter. Okay.
No, it's not
Christmas. Just Christmas matters.
It's all Christmas. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do Advent, but just do that in November.
Okay.
All right. Well, anyway, we're back pre-Ash Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So when this comes out, it'll be in the middle of Lent.
That's, well, in the beginning of it. Yeah.
Well, you know.
Beginning of the middle.
The beginning, yes. You understand what I'm saying.
Nobody understands what we're saying right now.
We're in the crux of Lent.
For anyone who's still listening, this is how a calendar works.
And if you have been paying attention, and there's no reason for you to do that, normally the first Monday of the month, we go over the Bible.
Yeah, and that would be this episode.
That would be this episode.
Because February ended on a Monday.
Yes, but we are February... Yeah, it did on a Monday. March started on Tuesday. Yeah.
It threw me off because it was like the last day was a Monday. And so February seemed longer than normal because that last day was a Monday.
Sure.
It was still only 28 days, but it felt longer than normal because of that last day.
But it's also still shorter than any other month.
Sure.
I understand, but it felt like a longer February.
Are you on like the Garfields?
Don't worry about
like,
it.
The way how you approach the world.
Mondays.
Ugh, Mondays. It's your day off.
It felt like a really long February.
All
right.
All right. But we are not doing that. We will be back in April continuing through the Bible with the book of Luke. But we decided that there's a lot going on in our world right now.
We're breaking with tradition.
Yeah. So we wanted to kind of address some bigger issues that are happening right now. And
nothing's bigger than the Bible.
Fair enough.
Issues that are happening right now.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just kidding. Some things are bigger than the Bible.
Bigger is not comparatively to the Bible. There are bigger issues going on in our world right now. That's what I'm saying here. And anyway, Pastor David, you wrote up a lovely thing for our church.
I did.
Addressing some of these issues.
Oh, I haven't read it yet, but I heard it was good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate the props.
You're welcome. I liked it on Facebook. I knew it was going to be fine. It was a vote of confidence.
I've now got to rethink all the things that I've seen you like on Facebook. Like, does she actually know what this is about?
No.
Where's Greg getting those flat earth theories?
Maybe I have to rethink all the likes you got for this thing. I'm like, there's a like.
Right.
That's easier than reading.
I know him. I'll like that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Why don't you give us the high points here of your write-up?
The high points, yeah. The day that I wrote this was the morning after we experienced the beginning of the invasion of Ukraine.
Sorry, confusing. the day that you wrote this.
I wrote this.
The morning after.
Yeah. I wrote this on the morning after we experienced, I guess it was the morning of. All right. So I'll start.
Okay. So Russia invades Ukraine.
I'll start again.
Next day you write.
Middle
something.
Of the night.
This
Russia
is not
invades
piece
Ukraine.
This information.
So we had Russia invading Ukraine, and then in that same kind of 24-hour news cycle here in Texas, our governor released what I believe is technically called a governor's directive. I could be wrong on that. Mm. Lawyers, please forgive me. But released a directive to Child and Family Protective Services, which I think has a different name as far as the state agency.
Yeah.
Basically, following the Attorney General of Texas's recommendation that therapies offered to transgender youth, particularly therapies around transition processes, be considered child abuse and be reported as such, and that people should be reporting people who are treating or young people who are going through this transition process, particularly around, there were some specifics around therapies and medications and things like that. I have not read, nor do I have time to get into all of the specifics of those. Mm-hmm. But so my letter, I guess, my epistle, if you will, was a response to those two particular issues. And, you know, particularly for Lord of Life, I think we have a pretty clear stance on where we fall on these things. And so I wanted to reaffirm that for our community, but also to affirm it for the broader community who, like Elise, may or may not have actually read it.
Sure.
But it's out there as well. And so we kind of took two stances of, hey, you know, war is not what we ever want. And so we're going to pray for people in Ukraine. And we're also going to pray for the people who are perpetuating violence, and that they would seek a path towards nonviolence and seek a path towards a resolution. Hopefully one that doesn't involve just conquering everybody. And then also affirming that Lord of Life is a place where we welcome all people in the name of God, because we believe God welcomes all people, and that we are going to be a community that continues to stand for that. And so that was the purpose of the letter.
Yeah.
It was said better in the letter itself, because I thought about it more.
It's a wonderfully written letter. If you are connected to our church, you should definitely find that on Pastor David's Facebook or our church website.
Yep.
And we wanted to address those things on our podcast. These are major things happening in our world and in our communities. So today we're going to address not really the war in the Ukraine. We are not
geopolitical experts
on Eastern Europe.
We're not experts.
We're not there. But we do want to kind of approach, like, what is the Christian response to war?
Yeah.
How can Christians approach this subject of this, not only this war, but all war?
Yeah.
And then next week we will come and kind of say, like, what is our Christian response to the transgender community, and maybe since this is a little more local and personal, we can focus in on Governor Abbott's directive.
Sure.
So we're kind of highlighting these two major things, kind of things that we kind of have had in the back pocket for a while, and on my list of, like, things we could talk about.
We've been thinking about talking about just war for a while. We're just waiting for a war to break out.
long enough.
Well, and now it's kind of like we're all kind of thinking about these things.
So I
now it's time
understood.
To kind of get there. Before we jump into those things, we're going to take a quick side note to talk about a little bit of silly news.
Ooh, good. The news.
Because it's important to
I was
just
worried
kind of,
that we were just jumping right in.
It's important to relax a little bit, and then we'll get into kind
we
of
all
a
need
Christian
a
response story. All right.
What do we got? Olympics?
Not the Olympics.
Weird foods?
Not weird foods. No. We're animal news.
Okay.
I like animal news.
Me too.
You might not like this.
Might not.
Could you don't even know what it is.
I feel like I will.
I'm just saying, often weird news makes me not like the thing that I think I like.
Sure. All right. In Lake Tahoe, California.
I'm familiar.
How do you feel about Lake Tahoe?
500-pound bear known as Hank the Tank is terrorizing the community. Responsible for over 50 break-ins to search for food.
So he's like
Yogi
going
Bear
into
has come to life.
People's houses.
Yeah.
Yes, Hank the Tank.
Wait, he's learned how to open doors. He's like the Velociraptors in Jurassic Park.
He's like my cat.
Hank the Tank, also known as Jake, Yogi, or Big Guy, or King Henry.
What?
Sure.
He's got a lot of names.
Right. That's somebody with crazy.
Poor guy's got an identity crisis.
He is a severely food habituated bear?
Habituated?
Habituated bear. He's lost all fear of people and views them as like a source of where we can get food.
Yeah.
He's not like.
That's a problem.
That's no good.
He's
not. Problem.
Injured a human yet, but he has
that human hasn't yet stood in his way to get the food.
Right.
But he has breaking into houses to look for pizza and things like that.
He's a nonviolent offender. That's good.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think his favorite food is probably blueberry pie.
There it was.
Poisonberry.
But I'm gonna tell you this article.
How many other berries? Right. Can we have,
This article had me at Hank the Tank.
Yeah.
500-pound bear known as Hank the Tank. I'm like,
I'm in.
Let me read this one. I may skip over Pastor David's real things,
right.
but
click on
Hank
this one.
The Tank. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm in.
Did you like this one, though?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick gave this a big old heart on the Facebook.
Right.
Hank the Tank. Right. Yes, sir.
Yes. So, yeah, it's been busting through garages or home residents. How do you feel about Hank the Tank breaking into homes?
Well, you know, it seems like it's probably not Hank's fault. It's probably the fault of the people who have left food out and have allowed him to
get food in their home.
At some point, people left food out that he got used to getting, and now he's seeking it out in their homes.
But there has to be a bridge somewhere where he makes the connection across Lake Tahoe. Okay. Where he makes the connection between the food and the food inside the house. Like, who let them in to their kitchen one day and gave this bear pizza? That's what I want to know.
So it could just be a progression, right? It could be that, you know, people had food in their trash cans, and so the bear found food in their trash can, and then people found, or the people had their garage door open and the trash can was in the garage. So now the bear knows there's food in the garage. And then, you know, it's just an easy step into the door at that point. Yeah. I mean, you're already in the house.
Is it for a 500-pound?
I have no idea. I have no concept of how big a 500-pound bear is.
They're big. It's, they're freaking big.
Yeah, I mean, 500 pounds sounds like a lot. But
it's Hank the Tank, not like...
not Hank the caterpillar.
Not Hank the smart car. I mean, it's not that. Like,
Hank the Fiat.
You know, Tank is in the name. Imagine he's a big boy.
All right. Yeah. So it's probably not easy for him to fit through a doorway.
Yeah. I'm sure he can just wiggle that little chubby butt in there.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I would love to see this, actually.
Not in my home.
Like, I don't want it coming at me into my kitchen, but yeah.
Elise is looking to book an Airbnb to, to Lake Tahoe and throwing pizza out.
Hank, come here, Hank. Yeah.
Yes. Well, though the residents may find this unbearable.
Oh boy.
How many more of these do we have?
These puns are great.
That's Tony the Tiger. Yeah, he's not a bear.
Bears go grr.
Okay. But you did the grr-ate. That's Tony the Tiger.
It's time to maybe give a pause and really examine our situation here, because DNA evidence has suggested Hank the Tank may not be responsible for any of these break-ins at all. Twist ending.
Is Hank the Tank genetically engineered?
Or is it a person masquerading as a bear?
It's the least weird thing that's happened this year.
You're like, hey, I smell pizza at my neighbor's house. Let me get that bear costume on and crawl through the doggy door.
What do we think happened? Why is Hank not responsible?
It sounds like, of more than the 150 incident reports, 150? It could be three other bears responsible, not Hank the Tank.
Is Hank responsible for any of them?
Uncertain at this point.
So he was framed.
Bear League director Ann Bryant says Hank is not the culprit. They say
you
just like
not the father.
Just like they say in the murder shows, you can't argue with DNA.
Do they say that in the murder shows?
I don't know.
Okay. I think they probably say it better in the murder shows.
Right, yeah. Okay. The murder shows, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe she's got Johnny Cochran there. If the if the glove does not fit,
you must acquit.
If Hank does not fit in the doggy door, you must acquit.
Somebody have him try that doggy door on. Right. It clearly doesn't fit over Hank. You never fit this doggy door.
Conservationists are hoping that they can capture Hank and take him to a sanctuary in Colorado.
What about the other three offenders? That's what we really got to capture.
Are they a 500-pound bear named Hank the Tank?
I'm just saying, like, if moving Hank isn't going to solve the problem, why does Hank have to move?
Well, Hank's out there.
Not the problem.
Yeah, he's just living his life.
Let Hank stay. Yes. Let Hank stay.
Yeah. I agree. Hank is just living his life out there. Yeah. He's not doing anything wrong. Okay. Let Hank stay. I'm with you.
Hashtag let Hank stay.
That's the bare minimum you can do here.
Oh, there's another one.
Free Hank. That's
right. Spence said made for TV movie coming. Free Hank.
Sure.
You're right. Yeah.
Life but it would be pretty embarrassing.
Hank's going to have to jump over the back fence, and the little boy is going to like point as he goes over his head.
I'm not sure that 500-pound bear is jumping over anything. Okay,
he could fall on the fence. It could be a comedy. Like,
rolling through the fence. How embarrassing. Yes.
Well done. All right. That was the best one yet.
Right. We will keep you up to date. Will we? Hank the Tank. I'm following the story. Okay. Yeah. All right. I've got a Google alert for Hank the Tank.
All right. We will keep you up to date.
Yeah.
Bring you all the latest news in Just War and Hank the Tank.
Just War.
So as we get in here.
Not Just War. Just War.
Okay,
like justify.
Okay.
Yeah, justification.
I get it now.
Pat Robinson.
Just War.
Pat Robinson.
Of 700 Club fame.
Oh, Lord. What does he have to do with Hank the Tank?
Nothing, unfortunately.
Shoot.
But he has now recently said that Putin's invasion of Ukraine is God ordained to bring about the end of the world.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, boy.
This is not Pat Robinson's first foray with the end of the world.
Into the crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
I think he, like, mispredicted a few times.
all the time.
Yeah. Every
let's just say this. Every time he's predicted, he's been wrong. Right so far.
Thus far, this could be it, right?
Right. Well, the end of the world, to be fair, is pretty nebulous. Like, he doesn't say, like, when, right? It's bringing about it, maybe.
Only God knows, according to Jesus. Right. So,
yeah.
Not God and yet, Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson's pretty convinced he's figured it out.
Yeah. So I'm sure, like, all
God
of
God ordained.
Like most of us, we've been following the war in Ukraine and have a lot of opinions and things, thoughts like that.
None of my opinions center around this being God ordained. Let me just say that.
Agreed. Yeah. Look, I don't know. Pat Robertson's audience is probably, you know, mostly the elderly who are kind of just at home watching Christian television.
Does that make it better?
No, because he's probably also asking for donations, right. And that's probably a susceptible group.
Because it's the end of the world. So what do you need?
May I direct
for?
You to the John Oliver special on this?
Yeah. On Pat Robertson or on the Ukraine?
Well, I think he's one of them that he covers, but on like telepreachers, right? And donations, and it's wonderful.
It is great. Yeah.
I'll have to talk about it. Is it an episode of last week tonight?
Yep. Yeah.
You can find it on his YouTube.
Sure.
You
look it's worth
it. But it is very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
I live that particular nightmare, so I get it. That's why.
And I think he is still in there, like, not, it's not like a takedown of like Christianity. Sure. It's like there's one kind of like branch of that is, as a Christian, is
needs
wrong.
To be taken down. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, but anyway, in the Ukraine, I think we've all been following this idea, you know, Russia is invading, this people of Ukraine are rising up, including their president, to kind of withstand this attack.
Yeah.
It seems like from most of what I've seen, the majority of the world is like, hey, pretty pro-Ukraine right now.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, I think we talked kind of before the recording, like none of us really thought about Ukraine very much a couple weeks ago, and now all of a sudden,
there's Ukraine.
Yep.
I'm all about it.
And we're putting Ukrainian flags in our Facebook pictures.
I know the color of their flag. Yes. I know their president.
Right.
I know these things. And like we're kind of like saying these, you know, pretty impossible things. You know, but part of that discussion is like, as a Christian, how do we approach war? And here we have kind of this one side invading another country and they are withstanding the attack. And so it seems kind of like this is really justifiable. This is like easy to kind of get on board with, like the enemy's at the gates. What should you do? Kind of a thing. But that's not the only war we've witnessed.
Sure.
And in America, we've almost never seen that kind of war where the enemy is at the gates and we just need to defend the homeland.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not what happens. Usually war is fought far away.
For us,
on other people's soil, you know, for us.
In the modern era, right?
I'm an American, so that's kind of how
Since the inception of the United States as a country.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a civil war.
Well, but even, so Patrick and I talked about that a little bit. And even that, for most people, right, it was still fought somewhere else. Like, it was fought, like, through the South as the, but, you know, so the North, like, initially kind of circled the wagons, defended the home front, and then pursued into someone else's territory. So for the majority of the northern United States, that still wasn't their experience. And there was never a battle in New York for the Civil War or even in most of Ohio or things like that. Yeah.
And again, it's
not a perfect theory. It's an experience.
And I'm going to be honest, like, really the only wars I know about are the ones America's involved in. Like,
sure.
That's certainly, you know, a blind spot in my history. But, you know,
and
I'm also an American.
Mostly the ones in 1900 forward.
Yeah. So, World Wars. Yeah. I think we're pretty well versed on
those. Those. I know those. That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
The ones that result in me playing a game of Risk. Right. Yeah. Sure. I'm pretty good with those.
And even then, like, the ones I really know are, like, the ones we make movies about.
Right. Video games.
Yep.
Those are the ones I really got a good grasp on. Those are the ones that it's a little shaky.
Yeah.
But we were talking about, like, okay, so what are the ways Christians can approach global violence kind of a thing? And we might, you know, talk about some examples from war that we've seen and things like that. So the first way that Christians can approach kind of a global war is through pacifism. And this is going to draw a lot from the teachings of Jesus, once we covered in our last section of the Bible, of like, hey, it's important to love and care for one's enemy through, if you are struck on the cheek, to turn your other one towards your assailant. It is definitely inspired by teachings of Jesus to say, like, for me, there is never a situation where violence is the answer. So when it comes to war, even an enemy at the gates situation, nonviolence is always the answer.
Yeah. Even take, you know, Jesus being arrested, right? Jesus arrested in the garden, the enemy very much in the gates. He's being arrested. Peter draws a sword, cuts off the ear of one of the slaves of the high priest, I believe. Yeah. And Jesus stops it and says, no, we're not, this is not what this is about. And heals the guy who was injured and allows himself to be arrested.
Yeah.
Do we buy that truly being pacifism, though?
What do you mean?
To me, that doesn't seem truly like pacifism. Like, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just, you know, going to keep the peace or whatever, because that was specifically to upset the status quo.
Well, so I think there's two things to consider. I think one, and it's hard to make the distinction on a podcast because it's, you know, all about spelling. But so there's passivism, where you P-A-S-S-I-V, right? You're being passive in that approach and you're just literally doing nothing. And then there's pacifism, P-A-C-I-F.
Ooh, people love it when we spell. Yeah.
But so that pacifist, right, would be the I'm not going to respond violently.
Right.
And so there are lots of ways in which we respond to, you know, violence or to other actions that are pacifist, that do not involve coming back with violence. And I think Jesus, that's what we're getting at here, is that it's not a passive response that we're doing nothing. It's a pacifist response in that we're approaching it with an eye towards nonviolence. Like Martin Luther King's teachings or Gandhi's teachings, you know, we're going to respond by, you know, pursuing this, and we're going to allow ourselves sometimes to be injured, but we are not going to strike back. We are not going to engage in violence to fight back.
For sure.
So yeah, that's an important distinction there between those two.
Yeah, and I think that is kind of the crux of, I think if you're drawing war issues, looking at the life and teachings of Jesus, that's probably where you would land. Like, it's not about, like, we will just kind of like, hey, whatever's happening over there, if innocents are being slaughtered, we're just like, hey, what's on TV tonight? You know, like, it is active, but it's through nonviolent means.
Yeah.
And I think that does change the equation and does matter.
Even some of our, so just, you know, bring it into the current context, right? Sanctions on Russia are a pacifist response, right? It's a nonviolent way to try to inflict change and try to inflict a damage that would result in a change of behavior.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think
whether or not it's effective.
Right? That I think the crux of this is kind of pulling from this idea of, like, my enemy, the person doing violence, is an eternal human being, and ending their life even is an eternal human being.
Eternal human being?
Eternal.
So they live forever.
Yeah, they have an eternal soul.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
which part is are we having trouble with?
I just got confused. All right, I'm with you now.
Yeah,
they're a human being with an eternal soul.
They're an eternal being in a mortal shell. Okay, right, I was just want to be more clarified.
I was just confused. It's fine. Yes. All right, this is what happens when we record on a Tuesday. All right, it's all mull thrown off.
Okay.
And so, ending their life,
yeah,
on behalf of a country or behalf of my country's will is kind of out of bounds for my kind of my moral code.
Yeah.
That that I'm not going to take a temporal approach for an eternal person or eternal soul, kind of a thing. So, so again, pacifism does have sometimes a very high cost at being pacifistic.
Yeah.
You can think of, like, there are people in the Vietnam War who took a very pacifistic approach. And some of this, I think, in the more passive approach would be, hey, finding doctor's orders to avoid war or enrolling in college or medical school to avoid going to war, versus like Muhammad Ali, who went to jail, you know, who's very clearly making the stance, I will not go to war based on my beliefs, and I will accept the consequences of that decision.
Right.
And that is, I think, that is the truest, you know, in that situation, form of pacifism, because you're drawing attention to the injustice of what's happening and taking it on yourself. I'm willing to bear the injustice on my own shoulders to bring about change.
Yeah.
And I think that this is where it draws from. So what do you think, you know, drawing from the teachings of Jesus and his life, where is kind of the maybe criticisms of this point of view? Where could you find them?
Well, so for me, I think the criticism comes at, you know, what do you do when the enemy is at the gates, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you, and I don't always agree with these particular criticisms, but how do you act to defend innocent people who are going to be harmed if you don't? Because pacifism is not always going to stop immediate threats of violence, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if let's say that we're in a situation where there's a group of hostages and someone with a weapon of some kind who's going to injure them, right? Me negotiating with that person, or me, you know, threatening to cut them off from their bank accounts, or me, like, what, it's not, none of those things are going to save those people. What's going to save those people is that person who's inflicting the harm being stopped in whatever case that takes. And pacifism won't always stop that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes pacifism lives in an idealized world.
Sure.
And we live in a messy real one.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that they those two can come into conflict and clash mm-hmm. against one another. Mm-hmm. One of the things I value about kind of Lutheranism is like this idea of like we're having a foot in two worlds constantly. Mm-hmm. And I think so we can kind of approach this. This is the ideal is being a pacifistic approach to violence and war. And yet there may be situations where violence is the only solution to stopping evil yeah. and a greater violence.
Right.
You know, so a minor injustice may be the only option to stopping a major injustice.
Yeah.
And that is hard. That doesn't make those things easy, mm-hmm. but sometimes it says like that's sometimes the you have to reach a length where it does those things.
Yeah.
That's the pacifism is the idealized world that we should be striving towards, but we're not yet there. Mm-hmm. And that means sometimes unfortunately we got to get our hands dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so I was in high school when September 11th happened.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, it's about a year or so after that, because I would have been a sophomore at the time. And anyway, so about a year later, there was talk, and it obviously never happened, but there was talk of whether or not the draft was going to be reinstituted.
Sure.
Because we were, you know, going to war, and we were going to be in war in Afghanistan and Iraq and all over the Middle East, basically, apparently, virtually forever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's this talk about that. And I remember this is one of the first fights that I had, like a legit fight that I had with a girlfriend at the time, because mm-hmm. we were dating, and she was Church of the Brethren was her background. They're strictly nonviolent, like that's a yeah. big deal for them. And so we, you know, had this really like actual meaningful fight about the fact that I was saying, yeah, if I was drafted, I would go. And she was saying, why wouldn't you go to like Canada or go somewhere else that you could avoid being a part, like so that you could, you know, just mm-hmm. take a stand. And so I was like, mm-hmm. because I also feel like this is part of the messiness of the world we live in. Like,
right.
Yeah.
I just remember having this distinct position, like even as a, you know, mm-hmm. as a high schooler, not really fully understanding my faith or Lutheranism, sure. saying like, there's a place here where there's a call to do something about mm-hmm. violence in the world. Mm-hmm. Now, looking back on that, I probably would think very differently about the war and about what that draft absolutely. Would have meant. But that's, you know, sure. this is my yeah. sure. 20 sure. years later
right.
self looking
and nobody really knew at the time, right?
No,
like,
sure.
Yeah. Well, very, you know, fresh and...
Yeah.
Some of the intelligence community might have had a better idea than we did.
The general public.
We did not.
The general public, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We don't need to get into that.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember having the same similar debates. I was in college at that time mm-hmm. and kind of thinking of like what...
Old man.
Yeah. What happens if I'm drafted kind of a thing? What do I do? Yeah. Do I nonviolently accept the fate of saying I'm not going to go and whatever that means, what it means? I get drafted and kind of say like, I will gladly be a part of the armed forces. Yeah. I refuse to hold a weapon and shoot at an enemy combatant.
And have a movie made about you someday.
Right.
And so like whatever position you want me in, I will be and I will, you know, serve faithfully, but I refuse to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or do you say like, I'm part of the armed forces.
Yeah.
And like part of being a citizen in this country is sometimes defending its borders yeah. here and abroad, you know, like,
yeah.
and being a part of this. And I don't know, you know, I don't know the right answer. You yeah. know, it's very easy to say these things when I'm not in a trench and bullets are flying over my head.
Sure.
You know, right. it's very easy to have high ideals when that's not happening.
Yeah.
And when it is, I'm sure it gets much more messy and much more cloudy and much more difficult for those people yeah. involved. All right. Well, there's another point of view you can draw from the Bible through a justifiable war mm-hmm. or a just war. Mm-hmm. And Pastor David and I even kind of debated before recording like
yeah.
two versions of kind of this one
yeah.
this one thing. So why don't you kind of give us the highlights here? What is a just war?
Yeah. So historically, right, we discovered as Christians that wars were happening and that Jesus' teachings don't really line up with that. And so sure. we had to come up with a, okay, how can we make wars okay?
Yes. Yeah.
When is it okay right. for us to go to war?
For sure.
And so we go back to Anselm and some of the other people before him as well, and they came up with this thing that has historically been called just war theory. Not just war, but justified war theory.
I get
theory.
It now. Okay. Thank you.
Just making sure for all of our listeners right. and for
Elise. I wasn't privy to this planning talk ahead of time.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's more fun to bring you in later.
Yeah. Right.
So there's this idea of just war. When is a war justified? And there are kind of two categories, right? And the first is when are you justified in going to war? And mm-hmm. then when are you justified in your actions during a war? And how do you uphold certain practices and things like that all along? And so there are things like, you know, it can only be declared by an appropriate, you know, governmental body. Like I can't just say, well, I'm at war with Russia. Like that doesn't make any sense, right? Also, I would lose.
Right.
You know, and you have to have what were some of the other things that I'm not remembering? You have to have like a justifiable reason. Like there has to be a cause that you're going in for. It has to be used as a last resort. Like you can't say like, oh, well, we could negotiate, but instead we're just going to go to war first.
Yeah. Right.
And you have to use appropriate proportionate responses and all, like there are all these things that are supposed to go through. And then there's a list of things that you're supposed to do once you're in war as well. Most scholars would look at that list and say, even the wars that people were saying fit these criteria did not fit these criteria. Like there has never been a just war according to just war theory.
Yeah.
Whether we can or can't do it, we have never done it. That there's always been some way in which we have broken this policy. Even, you know, Patrick and I were talking about World War II and, you know, going in, you know, to theoretically going in to stop the Holocaust. A lot of justifiable things were happening there, but there were aspects of it that were probably not true to the just war theory, which is not to say that we should not have gone in, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
I want to be clear, like, I think we did the right thing, but that doesn't mean that it fits this category, which again lifts up this tension, Patrick, that you're talking about, where even when we're trying to do the right thing, we're inevitably going to fall short, and that's a hard thing, too. Because even, you know, we were talking about the use of the bomb in
Let's pause right there. Oh. So, yeah, because I think here we have World War II is often kind of like the just war, right? Like this idea of like on the European front, we have Germany obviously doing atrocities against its own citizens and against people that it's taking over. And then on the Pacific front, we have Japan, but they bomb Pearl Harbor first.
Right. Yep.
And so we have like these two things. Like one, we have defense of the innocents in Germany. And two, we have a response to aggression on the Pacific front. So
and mind you, the United States wasn't really involved in the war with actual like personnel and everything like that until after Pearl Harbor.
Correct. Right. Yeah.
Just to keep that in front. Like, it's not like we were fighting in Europe and then we're like, oh, let's go over here too.
Right. Spread around.
Yeah.
Sure. And so that one is sometimes like it's the easiest war for us to point to and kind of like say like, here we have these very clear, like a good side and a bad side. Mm-hmm. Even if that's not super true.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's really clear for us in the U.S.
And
for the people who get to write history.
Sure. Right. And Germany is obviously on the bad side, but sometimes like maybe we were also on the bad side. Maybe there was no good side.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe
talking to people in Japan about it is super enlightening, by the way.
Sure. and you know, maybe, you know, and probably also in World War II, like maybe Russia and England really kind of did all the heavy lifting and we just kind of came in at the final push.
Yeah. Especially we just got the credit.
Especially on the European
side. My favorite kind of group project.
On the European
flashy
side.
Flashy presentation. Yes. Yeah. Slept through the rest of it. Rolled up in a sequin t-shirt.
But we do have, on the Japanese side, the finale of that war is the dropping of two nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we've also kind of debated these things. And again, there are greater historical scholars than the three of us, shockingly, who've kind of debated both the merit and the unjustifiableness of dropping two nuclear bombs or two atomic bombs on Japan and what that meant for that war.
Mm-hmm.
The good, perhaps it ended the war much earlier than it ever would. Maybe Faster. Japan never would have surrendered. And maybe more innocents would have died without that. Maybe they would have. I don't know. It's hard to say. And we can certainly say coming out of that, Japan's global philosophy and philosophy towards violence shifted dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
We can kind of debate this all day. I wasn't there. I have no idea what it's like to be on a fighting in on the islands surrounding Japan. Yeah. I'm sure it was horrendous for everybody involved. But it seems like from the past, looking back, it's hard to say like, man, dropping an atomic weapon on a city and killing you know, hundreds of thousands of people, most of whom have nothing to do with the war, is hard.
Yeah, the unintended consequences of that particular type of explosion, right? I mean, there's one thing to go and bomb a military target.
Sure.
And then it's another thing to drop a bomb that, whether or not we fully understood what was going to happen afterwards, kills millions of people for years to come, right? And that's...
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know numbers. I shouldn't just say millions. Yeah.
A lot.
A significant amount.
A whole lot of civilians.
Yeah.
So in this just war theory, there are also two kind of like, how do you get into this war?
Right.
And this is kind of where we have these two competing paths. So one would be responsive.
Mm-hmm.
So this means the opposing side has to act with violence first.
Han shot first. Got it.
Yeah. This is not that.
Oh. It's not that. Okay.
I appreciate that.
Unless you are on the side of Greedo, right. You know,
I'm definitely on Greedo's side.
Yeah. So this would mean the other side has to commit an atrocity, and war is a response to that. So in the
So this is how it actually plays out in the Star Wars film.
In the new re-edit. In the re-edit. Yeah. So Ukraine defending its cities is this kind of side. Like we never went into Russia. They came in here.
Yep.
We are using violence to defend our people because they brought violence to us.
Yep.
You know, this is kind of the thing. Or if we want to highlight World War II, Germany is bringing violence to its citizens. Mm-hmm. We need to come in to defend the innocents, to bring to justifiable violence, to stop that violence.
Yeah, and not even just to its citizens, right? I mean, they went into Poland, France. It's like
Sure. And to, you know, to everybody.
Yeah.
So the other side is preemptive war. Mm-hmm. So the other side is threatening violence, but has yet to do something. Is it justifiable to enter into violent action or war-based action based on those threats without them actually doing anything yet?
Yeah.
And this is where it gets a little messier, right? And I think we can see this biblically. We can see these things kind of play out.
Mm-hmm.
We see God kind of sending Israel into the promised land in a very preemptive way of saying, you're going to find violence there. So like, there's no, let's not like wait for that to happen.
Yep.
Get in there,
yep.
Go to Jericho, march around it. You know, like these things are going to happen. So like, let's just, you know, jump the gun and get on in there.
Mm-hmm.
We also see stories of Israel being attacked by the Philistines and David coming back,
responding
to those things. We kind of see examples of this biblically in scripture. What do we think about kind of this way of approaching violence? It has to be a response, or it can be preemptive. What do you think?
So I want to be clear. I'm not particularly comfortable with violence in either context. Like that's just I lean towards a more pacifist stance.
Sure.
But with that being said, I'm far more comfortable with a responsive approach than I am to the preemptive. I think that, you know, what was that movie with Tom Cruise where he like, there's a...
All of them.
Well, okay. Yeah. But this one was like, there was a computer...
Top Gun.
No, it's not Top Gun. Yes. Just keep...
Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Jerry Maguire.
Good. Yep, that's it. Okay. Keep going. We'll get there. No, so this one, there's like he's a chief of police or something, and basically there's a computer
minority
system.
Report.
Yeah, Minority Report. It arrests you before you commit the crime, right?
Correct. Yep. Yeah.
And then he comes up as he's going to be the next one to be arrested or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I ever saw the movie.
It's a good movie.
But so I feel like that's the eventual path that this takes is then we come up with a system that's going to take everybody down before they can commit the bad action that they were going to commit, right?
Yeah.
We can kill the terrorists before they kill anybody else.
Yeah.
And you know, there is no, I mean, there's not really due process in war either, but there's no opportunity for due process or for nonviolent means in that, right?
Sure.
It's what I think preemptive sanctions, preemptive nonviolent resistance. Sure. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But preemptive violence is, I struggle with that a lot.
Sure.
I don't see a place that is a appropriate Christian response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It might be the thing that countries do. It might even be the best thing that a country can do. I don't know that it's an appropriate Christian response.
Yeah. I think the appropriate Christian response is like built on, if we have to wait for like innocents to die, why would not we step in before that happens?
Right.
Oh, I hear that. Yeah.
So I think that is like the response of like, oh, sorry, we got to wait for a city to get bombed before we can do anything about it. When the city is saying like, why don't you do something about that right now?
Right.
Like, why don't you do something about that before we all die?
Yeah.
You know, like, because, you know, this is kind of the what's happening. And again, we're really in many ways like simplifying kind of examples and things like that.
I mean, you have to an extent, right?
Right.
Yeah. In this conversation, you have to simplify to a point.
Yeah, like I don't know that there are right answers really when it comes down to it. To me, it seems like this whole situation is a symptom of things being broken to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that's a thing you're going to fix. I think it's a thing that you respond to in the best way that you can, but I don't know that there's a right answer.
Yeah, and that for me is really helpful and actually kind of brings it back to what I think is central to my own belief on this stuff is that, listen, I always think that murder is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There might be a time when I have to kill someone to protect someone I love or to do something else, that murder is still wrong, right?
Yeah.
The fact
that
I killed another human being is still wrong. That doesn't mean it wasn't the right or best action for me to take in the moment.
Right.
But that also doesn't mean that it's okay.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's what we sometimes get caught up in this is that we're saying like, oh, well, it's okay if we go and kill. No, it's still wrong if we go into war and like you're still an innocent person who's being forced to kill other people. That's still traumatizing. Right. That's still not in line with God's plan for humanity. That's still not in line with God's, you know, intention for your life. And it's probably even worthy of repentance in that sense. Like, to be aware of, like, God, I know that I killed these people and I know that that was not in line, but, you know, have mercy on me. And we depend and fall on the mercy of God at that point, which is what Lent is all about. So it's appropriate we talk about it now, right? But yeah, that doesn't mean it's okay. Just because it's the best option doesn't mean it's what God intended for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the things I really liked about you were saying, Elise, is like there's sometimes no good option.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it highlights, like, regardless of which of these three kind of like perspectives you may have, I think your voice in approaching geopolitical politics and like violence is valuable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think all three need to work together to approach every situation where violence could be a tool to use for whatever reason. And I think that they all matter, that to kind of weigh out all these things together, especially as we're not just dealing with an individual dealing with a home intruder or an active shooter at a public school kind of a thing. But when it comes to war with another country where there's an undeniable casualty count that is non-combatant.
Yeah.
There's undeniable that people will die that had no control over these situations. Even if they're enemy soldiers, they have no control over where they go or what they're doing. Usually, you know, it's people who are just living their lives, conscripted or thrust into a war bigger than themselves, figuring it out, right? Yeah. And so I think all three of these things matter to how we approach these kind of conversations. And so if you are strongly are one of these three, it's listen to other people who are not.
Right.
And I think that matters, so how we approach.
And I think the thing that we can take away from Jesus' teachings that can apply to any one of these three positions is to pray for our enemies.
Yeah.
That we genuinely and intentionally, you know, while you're in the foxhole, while you're in the midst of the battle, you are praying for the other people as well.
Yeah.
Even, you know, in the midst of this horrid thing that's happening, you know, and you're maybe not praying for them to be successful, but you're, you know, praying for them to have a change of heart or to, you know, to have some way that this comes to an end, that you don't have to continue to do this thing. I don't even know how to begin that prayer, but I think that happens. And yeah, you know, I go back to like what we learned in history class, right, about like people coming home from the Vietnam War and there being this massive, you know, pacifistic response to the Vietnam War from the United States. And so the soldiers coming home and being like spat on and hated and like, you know, these horrible things that happened to these people who had horrible things happen to them when they're serving their country in Vietnam. And like, that's also not a helpful Christian response. Like, that's not a helpful pacifistic response either.
Yeah.
Like, to dehumanize the very people who are going to serve in a war on your behalf, and so you don't, like, that's also not helpful.
Yeah.
So even if you disagree with a war, you can still be a human and treat the people who are, you know, the foot soldiers of this process, you can treat them with humanity and respect and dignity. And you can save your spit for, I don't know, the Secretary of Defense or the President or something like that.
For sure.
Yeah. Don't spit on them either. That'll result in the
probably
Secret Service
idea.
Coming down and doing stuff. Yeah.
For sure.
Don't spit on them. Don't spit on people.
Yeah. Yeah. But I
mean, just be nice.
Yeah. So obviously, and I don't know, we're recording this on a Tuesday. There's a lot of days between now and when this podcast is released. We don't know what's going to.
There might not even be a Ukraine by the
time. Yeah. I don't know how the Russian Ukraine conflict is resolved. If it is resolved by the time this it comes out, I don't know. Yeah. I know for me, I'm praying for the Ukrainian citizens and for Russian combatants. I do pray that they go home alive and even the worst of them have an opportunity for redemption.
Yeah.
Whether that happens in the midst of this combat or later in life, I do hope that that happens. Because I think we naturally are seeing Russia's kind of the bad guys in the situation. Ukraine's kind of the good guys in the situation.
Right.
So even those bad guys, I pray for the chances of redemption. Truth be told, there is a fourth or, you know, third, depending on how we're counting, way approach to war that you can kind of justify through the biblical means that Christians have done in the past.
Is this the Crusades?
This would be, this is going to be a total war kind of a thing. This
Avenge
is
the Holy Land.
Right.
The other side is so bad, there is no option but to go in and eradicate everyone. Non-combatants or just are just as bad as combatants under this philosophy. So this would be, sometimes we've used this to say, like, what is the solution to the Middle East? light it up,
yeah.
bomb it all to, you know, to hell in a sense. Yeah. That this is this total war philosophy. The other side is so bad that they must be eradicated. I don't agree with that. Like, no. Right. That's, I don't think you really can find this in light of Jesus entering the picture. Yeah. Maybe if you're selectively taking some of the stories from like Judges and Joshua, you might be able to find some justifications here.
Very selectively, but yes.
Very selectively, yeah. But I don't think you can really find this in scripture. So I do think the other three, I mean, two and a half, three, however you want to count them, matter to the discussion.
A number.
This one does not.
Yeah.
I don't think this one does bring any merit to the discussion at all on how we approach violence.
Yeah. Right. Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts on war? What is it good
for? I was waiting. It was the whole episode. He made it all the way to the end. Right. It was so close.
Because I'm for nonviolence when it comes to Hank the Tank.
Right. Right. That's, we
hashtag
can grant
free
him
Hank the Tank.
Clemency.
Hashtag Hank was framed.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode or any of the episodes, you can find all of us at beyondsundaypodcast.com. And of course, you can like, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast listening service. If you have any, you know, special thoughts on war or times when you've faced difficult thoughts about violence or how to engage in that, we'd love to hear it. And you can send those to us at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.